welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. We are into episode, I think it must be, I'm pretty sure it's 157. But Pete, it's been so long. I can't.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's off season, you know, so once every other week. And then we had the holiday week that Chad and I took off. So it has definitely been a while.
Yeah. And that means that there's a lot of news we haven't covered. And if you're listening this thinking, oh, thank God, Chad and Pete are finally going to be the 34th and 35th people to tell me how to react to every one of those signings. We're not going to do that. That's too many things that have happened. If you really want our opinions on it, you can find the show on Twitter at Keep or Cut. That's Cut with a K. You can find Pete at Pete B Baseball on Twitter. You can find me on Blue Sky at Chad Young. I think I have to be like at chadyoung.bsky.app or something like that. I don't know, but you can find me on there. I'm there. I'm answering questions. So hit us up on those places if you really want our reactions to those signings, those trades, everything that's happened. We will weigh in on a little bit of that. We'll be pretty quick on it. But honestly, at this point, like if you've been waiting for us to hear about it, like go listen to some other podcasts. There's lots of other great podcasts out there. They have all responded to all of these deals already. We're catching up. Instead, we are going to focus on what we are here to focus on, which is keeper leagues. And so we're going to take a look at ADP and guys who we think at their ADP become really interesting keeper targets already. The reality is that in order to be a good keeper target, you got to be willing to pick up the guy a round or two early and still feel like there's keeper value there. So that's sort of how we're going to be thinking about it. But before we get to that, episode 157, jersey number 57. Yeah. Have you looked at jersey number 57, Pete?
I have. I think there's two exciting ones, in my opinion, with Johan and K-Rod.
Yeah, if you're a fantasy player of, I was going to say of our age, but you're much younger than me. A fantasy player between our ages, around our ages, in the general generation that we are, there was a period of time where Johan Santana and Francisco Rodriguez were elite fantasy assets at their respective positions. They are really it with this jersey number. You go down, you have Daryl Kyle, John Smiley. That's
Shane Bieber.
How about that? You got to go way down for him, though, because I've got this sorted by war and he simply hasn't accrued that much yet. He has a legitimate chance. He has a legitimate chance to accrue the second most war in MLB history while wearing the number. There are players who wore the number like once who were higher than him. But at this point, for him to have like be the best while wearing this number, he'd have to catch Santana. That would require another 34 war. I think that's unlikely to happen as much as I like Bieber. But to get to second on that list, he would need to catch really just K-Rod at 24. And that's only 7 more war. So yeah, I think there's a shot for Bieber to do that. I'm excited that he's back with Cleveland. I think, hopefully he can be healthy and be a boost down the stretch. But yeah, I think it's got to be Santana and or K-Rod who get the episode. So
I'm going Johan.
You have a preference?
All the way. Johan all the way.
Johan
Santana. Okay. Yeah.
He, the issue I have is that Santana, his best years were with the Twins when I, didn't really love every time we had to face him as a Guardians fan, as a Cleveland fan. So, but yeah, the guy, I mean, he was a special pitcher at his peak, right? His peak wasn't as long as maybe we would have liked, but man, was he awesome when he was at his best. So I will begrudgingly allow this to be the Johan Santana episode. I did say we were going to quickly talk about some of those transactions that happened. And I mean, since we last spoke, boy, Soto signed, Burns signed, Teoscar, Max Fried. There was a whole Carlos Santana, Josh Naylor trade signing thing. Christian Walker signed, Jock Peterson signed, Sean Manaea, Nathan Eovaldi, Tyler O'Neill had already happened. There are a lot of things. So the Crochet trade, that had happened. That has happened since then. So let's break this into hitters and pitchers. We'll start with the pitchers. And again, I don't want to get into, you know, the meaning of every single one of these, blah, 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 but like, are there any names in this list that after they're signing, you're like, okay, yeah, this pitcher has moved up or moved down for me because of the trade or the signing?
I guess let's start with Max Fried, because we can get him out of the way in 10 seconds. If you want to know how we feel about Max Fried, we actually talked about in our last episode, Max Fried going to the Yankees as a possibility. That was my preferred destination for him, given the options that seemed to be his likely destinations. So I think that's going to be a nice fit for a few years. And then that contract's probably not going to look so great. He's already lost a lot on that fastball, which isn't a good sign for his aging. But I do expect a couple of good seasons out of Max Fried. I mean, obviously, as a Red Sox fan, I'm very excited about Crochet. It's not the easiest park to pitch in. And they look like they're considering a six-man rotation. And if you're a fantasy manager, you don't love that because you'll never get a two-start week out of Garrett Crochet. At the same time, that should help him increase his innings total. I think too much is being made out of the innings total for Crochet as it stands. He was nails last year. He went from like 20 innings pitched or whatever the hell it was to like 140. And too much is being made out of his last few starts, where it's like, oh, look what happened once they started reeling him in. It was like two bad starts, and otherwise he was still pretty nasty. So like, I'm excited about the win potential for Crochet. I'm excited that he's a Red Sox. I worry about the six-man rotation part of it, because I don't think he needs as much babying as people seem to think he does. Or I guess nobody really knows what kind of babying he needs. But if they do go to a six-man rotation, that is going to hurt Crochet.
Yeah, I mean, Crochet, last year he was the number 33 pitcher on the Razzball player rater. But he was really hurt by wins, which was a result of both how the White Sox used him and, you know, when your team only wins 15 games, you as a starting pitcher can only win so many of those. So
right.
If you just make him like a normal, get him up, I'm not talking about making him like a 20 win guy, it's just like a normal amount of 10, 50, whatever. He jumps from being the 33rd pitcher to like borderline top 10 last year. That should happen from a wins perspective. Plus, he should throw more innings this year. So I think he was effectively a top 10 pitcher last year. I think he should be better this year. The six-man rotation thing, If you were drafting Garrett Crochet, penciling in 30 plus starts, you were doing it wrong. Like, that wasn't where this was headed, no matter what. They could go with a 4-man rotation. He wasn't going to make 30 plus starts. So with a 6-man rotation, you get 27, 26, something like that, instead of whatever he would have gotten in a 5-man rotation. He wasn't going to be much over that anyways. Right. He was going to be somewhere between 25 and maybe 30 starts. He's still going to be in that range. So maybe you've lost a little upside of the potential that he just actually did cruise to 30, 31, 32 starts. But that wasn't what I was expecting from him. And so it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah. I think it's a healthy total, 146. Like, even if we get a repeat of 146 from last year, you're getting an Ohtani points. He was only behind in points per innings pitch Blake Snell, Chris Sale, Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal, Tyler Glasnow, and he pitched more innings than Glasnow, obviously, because Glasnow still hasn't reached that 140 mark that Crochet got last season. And then it was Garrett Crochet. So he's an elite star. I'm making too much out of the six-man rotation. They might not even do it. They're just considering it.
Yeah. The other pitcher I want to talk quickly about is Corbin Burnes. And the reason I want to talk about Burnes is he actually was a top 10 starter for the player rater last year. He was ninth. And Arizona, not, I think, on anyone's radar of where he was likely to sign. Pretty surprising. Here's the thing that stands out to me for Corbin Burnes. Obviously, for right-handed hitters, we know that Oriole Park has been a disaster for power. They're moving the wall in a bit. We'll see how that changes. But for last year, when he was there, he was, you know, home run park factor for right-handed hitters of 79, tied for the third lowest in baseball. Moving to Chase Field, that bumps up to 94. Now, 94 is still the 20th highest in baseball. It is not like he's going to some, you know, power happy park for righties. Burns, though, is a righty, which means you worry a little bit more about power from lefties, right? From the opposite handed guys. Chase Field's park factor, rolling 3-year park factor per Baseball Savant for left-handed hitters is the lowest in baseball, 76. I think this is going to prove to be a pretty significant park improvement for him. And you add to that, that there's been, you know, I listened to Rates and Barrels today. They actually DVR talked about this park factor thing. But Eno talked about Burns getting improvement in his pitches and in his stuff at the end of last year. If that sticks, plus what I think could be a pretty significant park factor improvement, you know, Burns could take a step forward. And he was already a top 10 pitcher. And if you look at, you know, if you look at ADP right now, I'm looking at the ADP on Fantrax. Burns is going as the fifth pitcher off the board. And that felt like, I've heard some people saying like, oh man, is he really the number five? Yeah, I think he kind of is. I think that's a totally reasonable place for him to be. You know, if you look at that ADP, it's Skubal, Skeens, Wheeler, Gilbert, Burns. And then you have Reagan, Sale, Cease, Crochet, Kirby after that. Garrett Cole coming in next. I have no problem with Burns there. I think I could actually nitpick some of the other ADP in there. But I think, yeah, I think Burns is going to have a good year.
Yeah, I mean, like he's done it all sorts of different ways. And the consistency in the innings pitched, he's thrown at least 194 innings pitched each of the last three seasons. I think that's why the ADP is where it is, right? Like Chris Sale, I think, is in a way being slept on because people are so scarred from the years before last season. But if you just look at 2024, he should clearly be going ahead of Corbin Burns. The difference is Corbin Burns is just so reliable. He's like Zach Wheeler in that way that like he's going to make his 30 starts. The ERA is going to be pretty good. And you mentioned how Eno is talking about the stuff coming back. Through 30 innings in September, that strikeout rate was at its highest mark, 27.7%, which isn't like knock your socks off, but it's pretty, it's good. It's good. Right. It's very good. And it was his best month of the season for strikeout rate. So, and it wasn't a tiny sample. Again, 30 innings pitched. It's a full month of pitching. It's not like he was taking his last couple starts off. I love Corbin Burns, and I think Arizona is going to be a good landing spot for him.
Would you move him up even higher? Like, would you take him above Logan Gilbert, the pitcher going before him on Fantrax?
No, I don't think so. I just think, like, I'm just so scared of starting pitchers. And I hate to say it's an age thing because it's not. Like, age really shouldn't matter. If a guy's healthy, just ride him out. Young pitchers get hurt all the time. It just feels like Gilbert is becoming this reliable guy. He was so good last season. His win total was such an anomaly. I know Seattle kind of sucks, but they're not like they have to score more runs for him than they did last year, right? Which is only going to boost his value that much more. So it's close, but I think I would still take Gilbert ahead of him. I think I would take Sale ahead of both of them though. So
I don't interesting know. In redraft or in keeper.
Yeah, in redraft. In keeper, I'm definitely taking Gilbert ahead of both. In redraft, I think I go Sale, Gilbert, Burns, or Sale, Burns, Gilbert. But I think I have Sale before both of them.
Interesting. Yeah, I think if I'm looking at just that trio, I think you're right that in redraft, it's Sale. Boy, is it Sale, Burns, Gilbert, or Sale, Gilbert, Burns?
Yeah,
that's Sale first for me, and then I'm really torn. But you're right. In a keeper, it's definitely Gilbert, Burns, Sale in that order. The other guy, by the way, as I'm looking at this ADP, Gilbert's fourth, Burns fifth, Sale is seventh. The guy sixth is Cole Reagans. Where does he fit in for you?
Well, you know I love Cole Reagans. Yeah, I'm gonna put Reagans ahead of all of those guys. So I guess in redraft, I'm Reagan's Sale, Gilbert Burns, and in keeper, I'm Reagan's Gilbert Burns Sale.
Got it. Yeah, I'm not quite as high on Reagan's. I do think in keeper he is ahead of Sale for me, and I still would go Gilbert Burns. Maybe I go Gilbert Reagan's Burns Sale in keeper and redraft. I don't know exactly where he fits in.
What makes the keeper thing so hard is that, like, Corbin Burns is not like some old man. He's right. 30 years old. So, like, you have to be really, really good and young, you know, to be ahead of him. I think maybe at this point, if the strikeouts stay close to where they have been for Burns and they've been trending down, then I think I would just prefer Gilbert, right? I mean, they're almost going to be the same thing. And I think Gilbert's going to have, or Gilbert's younger. I'm going to get more years out of him. Reagan's though is like the whole package for me, so that's where I'm coming from with it. It's close though, man. It's interesting.
Yeah, let's talk hitters now for a moment. The big sort of hitter moves: Teoscar Hernandez back to the Dodgers, Christian Walker to the Astros, Carlos Santana signed with Cleveland after Cleveland traded Josh Naylor to Arizona.
You said that with a little frustration in your tone there, Chad.
Yeah, I'll give my quick assessment of that is, I think that what the Guardians did here was probably good baseball business from the perspective that they added an interesting young pitcher. They added a comp B pick, I think, from Arizona, and they went from Naylor to Santana at first base, which is a drop off, but, like, you know, not like it's not like you traded away a star and now have a backup that you shouldn't be playing. Except they just won the division and got to the ALCS. And while they only won one game in the ALCS, the series was closer than a 4-1 total score suggests. I think this is a moment where, like, they should be pushing in, not pulling back. And this is a keep the window open kind of move, not a strengthen the moment kind of move. And that's really frustrating to me. On top of that, Santana was really bad against right-handed pitching last year. He's really a small side of a platoon guy, and I don't think they're going to use him that way. And that makes me very nervous.
Sure.
Overall on those, any of those hitters where you're like, oh, I love the landing spot, I hate the landing spot, anything like that?
I mean, the biggest bat there, correct me if I'm wrong, is Teoscar, right? And he's just going back to the Dodgers, so that's obviously a great situation. I think an under-the-radar one might be Josh Bell going back to Washington. He was terrific for them back in 2022. I think he started the season with Washington and got traded to San Diego, and then was terrible with San Diego. But he was really good, and he's just a notoriously streaky guy. I think we've definitely come to accept that with Josh Bell. But assuming there's enough playing time there to carve out between him and Nate Lowe and the young guys they have coming up that are going to need their play time, I think that's like a fun situation. And I could see the Nationals offense with Dylan Cruz and my boy CJ Abrams, who I know you don't like, but I'm going to continue to hype him up for now. I could see that offense being surprising, and Bell has posted in his career some pretty hefty RBI totals, and he should be right in the middle of all of that. So I think that is a sneaky pickup. Otherwise, I don't know, Bellinger to the Yankees, maybe. I don't know. That's a great lineup.
I like Bellinger to the Yankees. Obviously, like, being a lefty in that park is great. I think we talked with Burns about what a bad power park Chase is for lefties. And so I do think Josh Naylor, it's worth keeping in mind, is that's going to be, I think the home run total is going to go down, right?
Sure.
So I'm a big Naylor fan. I have him on a bunch of rosters, and I'm ratcheting down my expectations for him. On the other hand, Christian Walker, the Crawford boxes are beckoning to him. He even commented on it, right? I think he said something about, like, teeing off on those things. Let me see if I can find that. But it's yeah, it's a good fit for him, and he'll be there for a little while. So I'm feeling pretty good about Christian Walker, where I've got him, or and if I'm drafting. Yeah, he just, it's a simple quote, but he said, that porch out there is tempting, that's for sure. So yeah, I'm feeling good about that one. That's really it. None of these others, like, I feel a lot better about Teoscar where I have him. Like in the Fangraph staff league on a new league, I have a $21 Teoscar Hernandez. And the possibility of him signing a 3-4 year deal, something like that, in a bad park was, I wouldn't say it was weighing on me. It wasn't like I was, you know, upset over it, but like, it was concerning. It was, you know, it could happen. Him being now locked into Dodger Stadium for at least a couple years, you know, it should be 3, but who knows if they make trades, stuff like that. Oh, I'm like, that's an awesome spot for him, obviously. And I feel really good about having him everywhere I've got him now, because that's a good place.
Especially a player like that, where like lineup context, I think, matters more for guys who have a strikeout rate around 30%. Like, we need Teoscar to see as many fastballs as possible. We need Teoscar to be up there with guys on base as much as possible. Because any player with a strikeout rate of 30, 31, 32% has real bottoming out potential. But I think when you're in a lineup like that, it's just extra insulation to make sure that doesn't happen, which allows you to feel comfortable spending, you know, $21 or a high draft pick on a player like that.
Yeah, for sure. So that's all we're going to really cover on those signings and trades and all that stuff that happened. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the meat of the episode. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We are going to get into guys who, at their ADP, we feel good about them as keepers. The way we sort of thought about this was, you look at their ADP, if you even had to jump around or go early in a round or whatever to take them, you'd still feel like, yeah, there's keeper value I expect to see here. I think there's some interesting names out there. I will say Pete sent me his list of names, so he has done his research. He's got some ideas. I am figuring this out as I go. I've got a couple names in mind, but I'm gonna have to come up with more as I go. So,
building Pete, the plane as we fly.
That's right. As I'm doing that research, though, why don't you get us started? Who's the first name you want to talk about?
Sure. So I'll get my one pitcher out of the way. I'll start by saying, just so folks know, if you're a longtime listener of the show, and we're so lucky to have some people that are, I have not selected Nick Senzel and I have not selected Edward Cabrera. So breathe easy. I'm not going to beat those drums in this episode, because we've done stuff like this in the past, and I talk about those guys, I think, every episode. Nick Senzel, wherever you are, man, you know, I love you, but sorry, it never worked out. My one pitcher that I want to focus on here is Bowden Francis. I think it's Bowden Francis.
I think it's Bowden.
Yeah. He's got an ADP of 216 so far on the NFBC. Last year, he posted a 3.3 ERA, 0.93 whip, had 92 strikeouts through 103.2 innings pitched. So he's not a huge strikeout pitcher. And I think actually that's why he's so low, right? On top of being a late bloomer, he is, I think, 28 years old, he'll turn 29 right at the beginning of the season. So a late bloomer, he's a guy who's had opportunities in the past and really squandered them. And I think when you look at that on top of the fact that in the second half, which I'm going to focus on because it was literally historic, baseball's been around a real long time. Bowden Francis made history last season, but it did come with a strand rate of 96%. His BABIP was 142. His FIP and his XFIP were in the high threes. So it was a little bit misleading of a second half, but oh my God, was his second half crazy. I said it was historic. Bowden's second half whip was 0.60. That is the lowest whip ever for a pitcher's second half in MLB history through a minimum of 50 innings pitched. So when I hear a stat like that, I mean, you could say it's anecdotal. He was clearly lucky, whatever. I agree, obviously, that there was a lot of luck involved, because I don't believe that he's a 0.60 whip pitcher. At the same time, I don't think any pitcher that's like Joe Schmo or even not good or not worth drafting can do what he did in the second half. Something clearly changed. He doesn't throw hard. But he was unhittable. He was literally not allowing hits. I think he almost threw two no hitters through all of that. And it also wasn't like a quality of opponent situation. His second half starts came against Baltimore, the Angels, the Cubs, the Angels, Boston, Philadelphia, the Mets, the Rangers, and Boston again. And the only ones that were not quality starts were the ones that came against Baltimore, and both of those were on the heels of making relief appearances. So I don't know how much that actually contributed to him not being able to go deep into his outings. So I'm so cool with the 96% strand rate and the 142 BABIP, because this is a guy who had a 1.80 ERA, 0.60 whip, in a 3.4% walk rate in his final 65 innings. He just doesn't, if he's not walking guys and he's really hard to get a hit off of, he should be really good for your ratios. He's still just 29 or 28 turning 29. And I think with an ADP of 216, it's just like any risk is baked into the cost. Like there's no, pick 216. There's no risk. So even if you don't believe in his second half, he's probably still worth taking there.
Yeah, I will. Here's what I'm going to throw out on Francis is just as where I am interested in him and where I am not. One concern I have with him is even last year, as good as he was, his home run per fly ball rate was his home run per nine was 1.48. So 12.8% home run per fly ball rate, maybe a little bit inflated, but not a ton. And the year before that, by the way, he had 36 innings as a reliever and it was 1.24. So he's going to be a little bit homer prone. I don't think there's any good reason to think he won't be at least a little bit homer prone. So auto new leagues, you're not getting a lot of strikeouts because he's not a big strikeout guy. And you're giving up a decent number of home runs. I am more concerned about him in that context than I am in a 5x5 context, for example, because I think he'll be better in a 5x5 context. On the other hand, my CBS head-to-head league that I've mentioned before, strikeout to walk ratio is a category. Yeah, that gives him a much higher floor, because even with a mediocre ERA, even if the whip goes up, like the walk rate is legit. Like it just is. It just, that's, he's had a good walk rate throughout his entire major league career. It's bounced around a bit in the minors, but if you go to sort of his most recent minor stops, it stayed pretty low. And so I'm feeling pretty good about his walk rate. And so I like that piece, but I think that I don't expect a ton of strikeouts. I do expect more home runs than you might like to see. That's where I get concerned. And so that will impact where I am and where I am not interested in him. Does that make sense?
It does. I think the comp is maybe like when Lucas Giolito was actually good. So like back in 2019, 2020, right, without the strikeouts. I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. A real fly ball guy, probably a mid threes ERA because of the homers, but it's not going to get much worse. And the whip is going to be really, really good because of all the fly balls and the lack of walks. He's not going to strike out guys like Lucas Giolito strikes out guys. That's kind of where I'm at with Francis. I'm excited about him. I got him in both leagues that I've drafted for real so far this year. They're both draft and holds. I got him in both. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is, literally.
So I'll talk about my pitcher as well, because I did find a pitcher I was interested in. And this one, this is going to start off sounding like Chad being a homer. And it's going to sound like I'm trying to talk you way up into this guy. And I'm not actually that high on this guy. But last year, per the Razzball Player Rater, Luis L. Ortiz was the number 68 pitcher in fantasy sports, fantasy baseball. His ADP on Fantrax right now is 347.9. He's going after like Jordan Montgomery, JP Sears, Frankie Montas, Lucas Giolito, your boy Edward Cabrera, Hayden Birdsong, Andrew Abbott. Like, I could go a long way up this list. David Peterson going way before him. DJ Hurts. Aaron Civale going way... Aaron Civale is going 50 picks earlier than him. And Ortiz was... He was good last year. Like, he was. And yes, the 3.32 ERA came with a 4.25 FIP. The strikeouts are not super high, 7.10 sort of per nine, sort of similar to what we're talking about with Francis. The walks are not as good as they are with Francis. The difference for me with Ortiz and Francis, other than the fact that the cost is absurdly low, even lower than it is for Francis, is that we have seen Ortiz put up a high-ish strikeout rate, 24.6% in 2022. And then we've seen him control his walks more recently in 2024. And he's now moving from nothing against Pittsburgh. It's a perfectly fine org, but they're not an org that has a, you know, a great reputation for just developing, churning out pitching. And he's moving to an org that does have that reputation. And so you've got a 25-year-old pitcher who's got some good underlying skills that he's already shown. He's got some pitches, like his stuff plus on his slider is 121. His sinker is a 105. And then he's got a couple other pitches, a 97 on his fastball, on his four seam, and a 90. He's got a cut fastball at 90. His overall stuff plus last year was a 104. His location was a 100. Like, he's pretty solid stuff there. And now he's going to an organization that's known for helping guys get a little more velocity, helping guys improve their pitch shape. Like, does that mean he's going to go out there and be an ace? No. I mean, maybe. I hope so. I really, really hope so. But that's not, you don't have to pay that price for him. You can draft him in round, what did I say his ADP was? 350 something? 347? 347.8. So that's like, you're talking about around, like, I don't know, almost round 30 in a 12 teamer. Yeah, I'll take him at the, you know, the 25th, 26th, 27th, like the end of my drafts. Our keeper cut listener leagues on Fantrax are 28 rounds. In those drafts, because of all my keepers, my last pick will probably be, I don't know, the 22nd round. Now that 22nd round pick will be equivalent of a 28th round pick, right? So it's not like I'm saying take him super duper crazy early, but I would take a 22nd round pick with him if he's available, because if he ends up costing me a 21st or a 20th as a keeper next year, I think there's a real chance he has value as a keeper at that cost. All he has to do to be a keeper at that cost is repeat what he did last year. If he shows any growth and development, there's even more upside there. So I feel pretty good about grabbing him in the end game. Now, I have him in some auto new leagues where I have him at like $8, $9, $10. And I have Francis. I have an $8 Bowden Francis. Someone just offered me a $12 Bowden Francis in a trade. Both of these guys, like, when they get up to that price, I have a harder time with that. Eight maybe, 12, no. But in an auto new auction, if Ortiz is available to me at like less than $5 towards the end of the auction, yeah, I'm going to pick him up. In a draft, if I'm past round 20 and, you know, it's either a keeper league where round 20 means, you know, there've been a bunch of keepers, round 20 is really round 26, 27, 28. Yeah, I'll do that for sure.
Yeah, he's really interesting. I mean, as a starter, his numbers are better than they were as a reliever, and he kind of like was unconventional in that for most of the season, or I should say at the start of the season, he was a reliever. It wasn't like he was on again, off again, like, I don't know, like what the Yankees would do with Joba Chamberlain. He was a reliever for most of the season, and then he just became a starter. Once he became a starter, I mean, he was really good. And I say it was unconventional in that, he went seven innings a couple of times. He was routinely kind of going six innings, which is just not something that you usually see out of somebody who converts from a reliever to a starter. So just from that point alone, that kind of interests me. Guys that can show that they're not just starting games and putting up numbers, but they're actually starting games and going relatively deep in outings and actually giving you an opportunity to get a win or to get a quality start. So yeah, he's not somebody that was on my radar before, but definitely somebody I find pretty interesting here.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, down the stretch, like his, He shifted to being a starter. Let's see. He made his first start on June 26th. Then he went back and made one more relief appearance. Then on July 7th, he was sort of in the rotation.
For good.
For good. Mm-hmm. And 6 innings, 5 2/3, 7, 5, 5 1/3, 6, 5, 6, 6, 6, 5 2/3, 4, 6, 7. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's just a normal starter. That's not a reliever converted to starter. That's a starting pitcher.
Yeah. So I do think that the big concern here is definitely like the lack of strikeouts creates some risk. Mm-hmm. He is a little bit, you know, he has a 1.06 home run per nine, but it was 1.33 down the stretch last year. If you look at like his last seven starts, which is sort of an arbitrary number I just decided to look at, two of those, I mean, if I go back to just his last six starts, it goes down to 1.04, but he's not suppressing home runs necessarily. The FIP is not great because the strikeout numbers aren't great. And so you are looking at like, you really want to see him increase those strikeouts, but I'll take a shot at that. All right, Pete, that was your pitcher. Why don't you go to a hitter? What position you want to talk about?
Sure. So I'm going to go in like order of ADP. So this is my next highest taken player. My first was Bowden Francis. And now I'm going to go with Jake McCarthy of the Diamondbacks. His ADP is 233. Last season, 66 runs, 8 homers, 56 RBI, 25 stolen bases, and a 285 average. And it's like, it's kind of weird for me to pick a player like Jake McCarthy because he's not really my kind of player. I'm more likely to take a chance on like a guy who's just barreling the crap out of the ball and maybe like striking out too much. Which is actually exactly who my last player is. People can maybe try and guess and think about who that might be. Jake McCarthy like never barrels the ball. His average exit velocity is like what I would imagine Aaron Judge's exit velocity would be if Aaron Judge was like only allowed to swing a Twizzler. So like he just does not impact the ball. And yet here we are. Look, first of all, the Diamondbacks lineup is absolutely stacked. I was going to mention that when you brought up Naylor, but just top to bottom, that lineup is so, so good. And Roster Resource right now has McCarthy batting fifth, which I don't know how that's going to shake out. I think there's a lot of different ways Arizona, Tori Lavullo, if he's the one that's still there, could arrange that lineup. But his roster spot is safe. He's an excellent fielder. He's a terrific athlete, you know, right at the top there sprint speed. And it's not like there's anybody not being gnawing at his heels, right? Like Alec Thomas hasn't shown anything in the major league level yet. And he's valuable. He only struck out 15.8% of the time last year, a mark in the 83rd percentile among qualifiers. That doesn't hurt his chances of sticking around. And he was a 3-WAR player. So like going into last season, there was some concern about, and even the year before, there was some concern about play time for Jake McCarthy. I just don't think that's there anymore. In under 500 plate appearances, he stole 25 bags, and he did chip in 8 homers. It all came at a 110 WRC plus. So I look at him as a guy who's in an excellent lineup, could be a 10-30 guy with a good average and, you know, 150, 160 runs plus RBI pretty easily. He doesn't have platoon issues. Yeah. He's just as good against left.
You're saying could be 10-30. Like his steamer projection is 11-28. Like that's 10-30 isn't like some crazy, like, oh, if things break right, like,
yeah, it's
if he gets the plate appearances, that should be right in his realistic range of outcomes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you package all that together. He might be a format dependent guy, but at that keeper cost, pick 233, like I'm pretty excited about Jake McCarthy. He might also be the youngest or second youngest player out of the four I chose. So that doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, because he came up and then fell off, like he was good and then he was bad and now he's back. Like there's a sense of him being old, but he's 27.
Yeah.
He's still young. I do think he's a little format dependent because again, like looking at any auto new points leagues, I think he's going to have plate appearance related issues because I think he's going to get pinch hit for and things like that. And he doesn't have the profile that sort of stands out in that format. And so, yeah, and in an auto new points league, I'm probably less excited about him, but not unexcited. I like what he can do. And I think, but you're right, in 5x5, and particularly in, particularly in OBP leagues, but he's a good average guy. He's a good OBP. He's sort of, the only thing he's not really going to do for you is he's not going to get a hit for a ton of power. And the runs, the runs and RBIs will depend on where he's hitting in the lineup. And like right now, if I look at Roster Resource, they have him hitting fifth. That feels weird to me. Like, he just doesn't feel like a fifth hitter. You know what I mean?
I agree.
But if you look at their lineup, Corbin Carroll's leading off. So let's start with this. McCarthy should be a leadoff hitter in theory, right? Gets on base, doesn't have a ton of power, runs the bases really well. He's exactly the kind of guy you want to put in front of your more powerful hitters. But the top of their lineup is Carroll and Marte. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, like, you don't need to move them down for him. Then you've got Josh Naylor third, Lourdes Gurriel fourth, if you look at, and then McCarthy fifth, if you look at Roster Resource, with Eugenio Suarez, Paven Smith is the DH, although I think they should try to upgrade that. Gabriel Moreno, eighth, and Geraldo Perdomo, ninth, although I think Lawler shows up at some point and has something to say about that. I think you could make a case that, at least against righties, going Carroll, McCarthy, Marte, Naylor, Gurriel would be better for the team. But if they're not going to do that, he's going to be in a weird spot where Gurriel's not an ideal guy to have in front of you from an RBI perspective. And I guess Suarez and Paven Smith aren't bad from a run perspective, but I wouldn't expect a ton of either runs or RBIs. I think he'll provide some of both, especially if he's in the middle lineup. Now, if they did in fact move him up to second and have Marte, Naylor, Gurriel hitting as the three guys behind him with Carroll in front of him, now we're talking. Right, because, and actually, maybe even a better option is to put Carroll second and McCarthy first. Like, maybe that's a better situation. But regardless, if he were hitting higher in the lineup, I would feel better. But it's not a bad spot for him. I do think, like, we'll have to see how this roster rounds out, because I don't think they're done. I don't think they should be done, I guess I'll say. Like, if they have money to spend, and maybe after Burns they don't, but like, wouldn't moving Eugenio Suarez to DH and putting Alex Bregman at third base make this team meaningfully better? I think it would. So we'll see what happens and how things shake out. But as of right now, he's going to hit fifth. And I think late in games, when a lefty comes on to face him, and I think you will see a lot of situations where teams go to a lefty for Naylor, deal with the lefty versus Gurriel and have the lefty ready to face McCarthy, he'll get lifted for Alec Thomas in those cases.
Well, Thomas is so, also a lefty. So I don't know if there's a place for Thomas. I was really excited about him as a prospect. He's just been so freaking bad.
I was thinking Alec Thomas. For some reason in my head, he was right-handed. But he's not. So yeah, I have no idea. Maybe he won't get pinch hit for. Maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, look, because
now I'm looking at their bench and like Blaze Alexander, is that who pinch hits for him?
Well, this was a team that,
I don't know.
They had Christian Walker, granted, but this was the best offense in baseball last year. And even then, Jake McCarthy's run and RBI totals weren't that great. I mean, they actively hurt you if you routinely started him. But my hope is obviously he gets more plate appearances this season. We'll see if that actually happens. Down the stretch, he was pretty much playing every single day. And if that continues going into next season, he's going to be really valuable.
And yet, actually, he had a 96 WRC plus against lefties. So he is not that's not good.
No.
But he's not a zero, right? He's not a guy that you desperately have to get out of the lineup against.
Yeah, he doesn't have platoon problems. Yeah. His batting average is almost identical against both.
Yeah. The reality is, like, if you're facing him, you should bring in your lefty to face him, because he's worse, but he's not so bad that Arizona has to bench him when that happens. So, all right. Okay. I can see that. Let's take one more quick break. When we come back, we got outfielders. I got one more outfielder, and then we got to talk infield as well. So we'll get to that next. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast, talking about guys who, at their ADP, we think are great keeper values. We would even jump a round or two to pick them and still feel good about keeping them. And we just talked about Jake McCarthy in the outfield. My outfielder, and I think he qualifies for outfield in most places. I should probably double check that. He made plenty of starts in right field last year. That was Jorge Soler. And Jorge Soler,
interesting.
I feel like everybody is aware or talks about the fact that he had a down year last year. And part of that is because he started the season with San Francisco and he was awful. And then he went to Atlanta and he was really good. And his overall line for the year last year was a 340 WOBA, which is down from the 361 he had with Miami the year before, but his career WOBA is exactly 340, right? He ended up basically with the season you expect from Jorge Soler, just less power than you might expect. He had 21 home runs instead of the normal 28 to 30. But all of that added in the bad start in San Francisco, where he was in a bad park and a bad lineup. He is number 157 on Razzball's player radar from last year. His ADP this year on Fantrax is 217. He is now signed with the Angels, which, you know, it's the Angels. It's not like you're not sitting there being like, oh, thank God, he's finally with a good team. But it's the number 8 park factor for power for right-handed hitters in baseball. That seems like it would be good for him. If you look at where he's been the last, you know, couple few stops, like I said, he was in Miami. He was great in Miami. Miami's a terrible power park for righties. 86 is the home run park factor there. Then he's with the Giants, which is even worse at 79, and that was where he struggled. And then he was with Atlanta, and Atlanta's park factor for right-handed power is 105, which is fine, but Anaheim's better. And Soler, who we think of as this, like, you know, good power hitter, like, he's never really been in a park that plays to his strengths, right? I mean, before he was with Miami, he was with Atlanta again. Not a bad park for him. Before that, he was with Kansas City. Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium is not a particularly good power park at all. And before that, he was with the Cubs, which is a below average power park for righties. And we'll talk about that park a little bit more a little bit later. But Soler is arguably, at age 32, he'll be 33 in February, going to, for the first time in his career, be in a park that really plays to his strengths. And he was fine last year, right? So if he repeats what he did last year, which means being terrible for a big chunk of the season before having a good end of the year, he'll be, I don't know, 60 picks. Like, there'll be a good 5-round cost benefit that you get from him. And I think he's going to have a better year this year than he did last year, right? I think he's going to push, you know, he's not a high average guy. Who knows what that lineup's going to be like? If Trout's healthy, it could be a great lineup for him. You know, you have Trout, Soler, Ward, Zach Neto comes back, Logan Ohapi continues to play well. Like, maybe it'll be a really good lineup. Then again, maybe, like, Ohapi's terrible, Neto is hurt all year, Trout plays 40 games. Like, who knows? But it's going to be better than it was in San Francisco. And I think he can just put up a really solid, like, pushing 30 home runs, pushing 75 to 80 runs in RBIs. And yeah, he's not going to steal any bases, and no, the average isn't going to be particularly good. Fine. I can live with that. I like him a little bit better in OBP leagues. I think the OBP could get even, like, it could even boost a little bit more in Anaheim, where teams won't necessarily have to pitch to him if the rest of that lineup isn't any good. So I'm a fan. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. And I think if you can get him for what looks like sort of an 18th-ish round pick, I definitely think he could have 12th round value, 11th round value, and be a perfectly acceptable keeper. Like, if you took him in the 15th round, I think you could keep him.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny because I have an $8 Jorge Soler in the League 13, and I was like, man, do I actually want to hold on to this? But I think he kind of just talked me into it. And when I'm projecting out,
I should have made you a trade offer first.
I should have. When I'm projecting out Soler in my head, I you know, I look at his run total from last year, 84. It's the second highest of his career. It's only behind that ridiculous monster season he had, where he was basically like a first round pick back in 2019. I kind of just expect the runs and RBI to flip. So I could totally see a 250 season, 84 RBI, 64 runs, and then like 9 or 10 more homers, which is definitely at worst worth the ADP, definitely worth more than that. And he's on a multi-year contract with the Angels, so I could see him coming back. I mean, basically, I think all the hitters in the Angels lineup are going to be in front of him, which is why I think the RBI number is going to be so good. I mean, Taylor Ward has put up some pretty good on-base percentages in the past. He's an above-average walk guy. Luis Ranjifo, we don't think of as an OBP guy, but the last two seasons, he's been right around 340. And Mike Trout, like you said, if he's healthy, then obviously the upside for Jorge Soler looks that much better. We'll see when Zach Neto comes back, whenever that is, how he looks and how he kind of factors into the lineup. But I think most of the offense is going to be in front of him. And so if I need RBI and I'm at that point in the draft, he's like one of your last good options for RBI in drafts as it stands right now.
Yep, I think that's true. Just remember that in League 13, you don't get value for RBIs. So you should probably trade him.
I should punt him.
Just saying. Yeah, because I do need, in that league, man, at some point we'll have to talk about some trade stuff that's going on, because in that league, Niv and I have been looking at our roster and we have like a $31 Schwarber, a $50 Yordan Alvarez, a $60 Soto, something like that, and like a $30 Lindor. Oh,
it's like the Dodgers.
And then we have like Wheeler in the 30s. I think we're just keeping him. I think we're just going to keep all these guys and go into the draft with no money and figure things out. But
yeah,
cheap outfielders like Soler are going to be where we're going to have to make our living. So
can I just say in that league, because I finished in third last season, I get to draft my division. And it's like, I'm not saying this complaining. It's like one of the most uncomfortable things, because like, I don't think you suck. Like, if I draft you into my division, I have to pick somebody. I can't be in a division by myself. So like, when it's your first pick and all those teams are up there, it's like, oh man, I'm sorry I'm drafting your team, but like, will you be in my division? Because I guess looking at your roster, I think I have a better team than you. I don't know. It feels like very passive aggressive trash talk. And I mean, I did it. I made it.
I love it. I love it.
It's an amazing,
I love everything about it.
It's an amazing rule. Like, I might shift my home league to that rule because I think it's so great. But oh my God, it's like setting myself. It's like picking who you want to face in the playoffs, you know, like that kind of thing. There was rumors about that in the NFL, and like, oh, that's just asking for it. Like, I'm asking for it by having these guys in my division.
You are. And it's hilarious because I have been in a position to pick in that league. And then this year I was in a position where I did not get to pick. I was being picked, and it's way more fun on this side. Cause on the one hand, I'm like, no, like it took us, we were one of the last, I don't know, I think we were the third to last pick. And so as people, you know, it seems to be taken, I'm like, all right, we're getting some respect here. I like that. And then we got taken with two teams left, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe that. You think those two teams are tougher than us? Oh, we're coming for you now.
See, and that's exactly like, how so I imagine the other three teams that I picked to be in my division are. They're like, oh, screw this guy. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I love it. I love everything about it. Anyways, we've talked pitchers and outfield. We should go to the infield dirt. You've got a corner infielder and a middle infielder, I believe, right?
Yeah, I really didn't mean to plan this out so well, but yeah.
Which do you want to talk first?
I'll go with the middle infielder because he is higher up in ADP, and that's Brandon Lau. ADP 246 last season, 56 runs, 21 homers, 58 RBI, 5 stolen bases, and a 244 average. I mean, second base is just such a disaster. You know, I can't remember who you were talking about earlier, but he was like the seventh second baseman on the board. And I was like, oh my God, that player? I can't remember.
We're about to talk about it.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. Either way, with second base being such a disaster, if you can get arguably, and I don't even know if it is arguable, the best power hitting second baseman at pick 246, like I think you got to do it. He's not a young player, but he certainly isn't old. He's only 30. So I do think at pick 246 with the upside of Brandon Lyle, there's keeper value there. I mean, look, he's going to get hurt. In 2024 is another injury riddled season. But even with that said, he still hit 21 homers in just 107 games. I don't even have to look it up. I bet that was the best pace of any second baseman. His barrel rate was 12.4%. That was the best since his monster 2021 season. He hit 39 that year. So, like, even if he hits a lot more line drives, just like he did last year, his K rate is still going to be north of 25%. It's still going to keep his average low. You should expect him to miss some games. But when he's healthy, I mean, like, this guy is one of the best power sources at middle infield, I think, that you can find, especially this late in drafts where all those elite shortstops are off the board. And certainly any second baseman really worth taking other than my last guy here. And he's done it before, right? He's had monster fantasy seasons. And maybe the most important thing for this upcoming season is he's going to be playing at George M. Steinbrenner Field. That's where he's going to call home. And so, like, that field is the Yankee spring training field, and it resembles the exact dimensions of Yankee Stadium, which you would think is like, oh my God, for Brandon Lyle, it's going to be huge. Surprisingly, he actually would have hit less home runs if he played all of his games at Yankee Stadium last year. That kind of feels like an anomaly to me. And Yankee Stadium still ranks third in MLB for left-handed homer park factor. So with Lau being an above average pull hitter, I don't really understand how he would have hit less home runs at Yankee Stadium last year, but it doesn't matter. I think the park is going to be an excellent, excellent fit. And on top of all of that, after that point, I think the Rays are going to trade him. It would be so un-Rays-like to just pick up his club option again next year and then have him ride out that contract and head out the door. So I think he has a chance to be in a great lineup, not a great lineup, in a great park this year. And then next year, you know, because we're talking keeper leagues here, after posting a great season, he might get moved to a better place to be. I think that's highly likely for a player on the Rays in the last year of his contract with some trade value. So the whole package, I really like Brandon Lau at pick 246.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's he is super interesting. I think he's going so late because he's missed time so often, and people worry about the decline. But like, he's only 30.
And I don't think he's ancient. I don't think he's declined. I think he's just been hurt.
Yeah,
but like the production has still been per game basis, like, excellent.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think if you go back and look at what he was doing early in his career, right, 2019 through 2021. He had a 365 WOBA. And then if you look at 2022 through this most recent season, he has a 328. Now, that's partially dragged down by 65 games in 2022. But even the last 2 years, it's 334, 335. Like, he's definitely not the guy he was 5 years ago. He's just not. But he doesn't have to be. Second base is like the weakest position on earth. Right. Like I really like this. I think this is good. I went with the second baseman as well. The second baseman I went with, as you mentioned, he is the seventh second baseman off the board at Fantrax. And so it seems a little aggressive to be like, man, this guy's the seventh off the board, and I still think he's way undervalued. I would take him. Look, here are the guys going ahead of him. Ketel Marte, Jose Altuve, Ozzy Albies, Marcus Semien, Bryce Durang, Jordan Westberg. Now, those last two are the two where I'm like, do you really like those guys more than Luis Garcia? Because Luis Garcia had a really good season last year. He had 18 home runs, 22 stolen bases, 58 runs, 70 RBIs, and a 282 average. That was with a 310 BAPIP that isn't super concerning. He has a 305 for his career, and he's the kind of guy who could run high BAPIP. So, I really like a lot of what I see from him. We saw some development last year in terms of like career high hard hit rate, career high barrel rate, as a result of career high XWOBA. His XWOBA was slightly over his WOBA, so it's not like he got crazy lucky. His X slugging was where most of that XWOBA growth is there. So there's more power potential in that bat, at least based on how the type of contact he makes. That lineup should be better this year. A full season of James Wood, a full season of Dylan Cruz. They added Nathaniel Lowe. Like, I think there's a lot to like here. And I think that if you look at what he did last year when he was a top 100 player, his ADP on Fantrax is 128. I think he'll be a top 100 guy again. So if I could take him two rounds early and still get value and still think he might be a keeper next year, I'm loving that. I'm loving that with Luis Garcia.
Yeah, he's a great pick here, especially so young, 24 years old. You brought up the two players in front of him, Terang and Westberg. I'm going to leave Westberg aside because personal preference, I prefer Jordan Westberg. I think he's freaking awesome. I think Bryce Terang is just there ahead of Garcia because he's a stolen base assassin. And if you're one of the few people that got unlucky and you missed out on stolen bases in those first two rounds, you probably are going to take Terang ahead of Luis Garcia. If you don't need stolen bases, I don't know why you would take Bryce Terang ahead of Luis Garcia. I do think Terang's playtime is completely safe because his glove is so good, which means he will get the 40 to 50 steals again. But otherwise, Garcia is kind of the whole package here for fantasy, where like nothing jumps off the page, but nothing's bad. So in a 5x5, he should be kind of contributing across the board, especially if, like you said, and like we've talked about twice now, the Nationals lineup should be marginally better here. I'm going to hesitate to hype them up too much, but it should be marginally better. So
it shouldn't be worse.
Shouldn't be worse. Absolutely should not be worse. And I think that might be setting the bar too low, right? I think it'll be all right. But I like the pick, Luis Garcia.
Got one more guy each, so let's try to get through those two. I said you had a corner infielder, but this guy actually is just sort of pure middle infield at this point, and that's Nolan Gorman. So another second baseman.
Yeah.
Would you rather take Gorman, like wait on Gorman, than take Lau, or are you taking Lau and then
let Gorman honestly, go? Lau is also going so late that like I'd much rather have Brandon Lau. But I think there are a lot of reasons to like Nolan Gorman, and his ADP of 543 so far, I think, is just way too low. I mean, that's in no man's land. That's just a free player at 543. I did get him in both of those draft and holds I had because of one piece of news that came out. And that was, I'm taking this directly from RotoWire. Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, has said the team would like to see Gorman receive close to 600 at-bats next season. Katie Wu of The Athletic reports. Now, Look, I would like to see that too, but it's kind of up to Nolan Gorman to not strike out at a near 40% clip. Otherwise, he's not going to come close to those 600 at-bats. With that said, if he can get that back down to like 32, 33%, which might honestly be asking too much, but if he can, he's otherwise a on contact an absolute study at a barrel rate over 16% each of the last two seasons, while also posting above league average walk rates. So like the strikeouts and hitting the ball in the air, he hits the ball in the air so much, he strikes out so much, his batting average has an absolute titanic level floor, but I still see upside here. In 2023, he was only 23 years old, 118 WRC plus with 27 homers through just 119 games. So I said Brandon Lau has the most power at second base. If Nolan Gorman's playing every day, it might be him. It's just what else is going to come with that? Is it going to be a 240 average or is it going to be a 190 average? And like that really is his range. And one of them is unplayable. The other makes him a top 10 second baseman. So he's really interesting and he's completely free. So I think he was my youngest player here by a long shot. And I really like him at where he's going.
Yeah. Cause he's another guy who like, he's been around so long that like he came up as a rookie and he sort of struggled and then he had that breakout season and then he had a bad season. He started to be like, man, he's been around. He's 24.
Yeah.
He'll still be 24 as of opening day. So that quote from Mozeliak, he wanted him to get 600. He also mentioned Jordan Walker, Lars Nootbaar, among others, is getting a lot of time. And it's good to see from the Cardinals because I think the Cardinals have gone through this process of pretending like they're a contender. And they're talking right now the right way, which is like, let's let these guys work things out and see what they can actually do and figure out what we've got and use this as a year to reset. And that's, if I were a Cardinals fan, I'd be glad to hear that. I think everything you said on Gorman is right. I think that the big thing with Gorman is like, you can't look at his season last season and be like, why are people so like, his last season sucked. He was bad. The bet on him is not like, oh, there were underlying skills. Well, the bet on him is he was so good the year before that. and he probably didn't just fall off the face of the earth. I mean, that's really it. And I think it's a smart bet. I like it. Gorman is a guy I will definitely have on my radar for end games of drafts and auctions for sure. So the corner infielder that I want to talk about, because I did actually pick a corner infielder, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on him because we've talked about him so much on this
face
show.
Of the show.
But I can't help it. I was like, I don't need to talk about him anymore.
No, you do.
ADP on Isaac Paredes. Isaac Paredes ADP is 236 on Fantrax. Among third basemen, he is going after Ryan McMahon. He's going after Luis Renjifo. Renjifo is also a second baseman. I actually like him better, but it's fine. He's going after Josh Jung, who has not proven he can stay on the field. Nolan Arenado, Michael Garcia, Max Muncy, Alec Bohm, Jake Berger, Eugenio Suarez, Junior Caminero. Like, we're moving way up the list, and I'm still in guys where I'm like, I think I could take Paredes over him. And the reality is, I think people are just overreacting to what happened in Chicago. Like, that's it. That's all this is, because he's been consistently the same guy. Then he went to Chicago and he really struggled in 212 plate appearances, and he has fallen off everybody's radar completely. Now, we all know, as we've talked about, that he has in his career outperformed his ex-WOBA because he pulls the ball hard down the line. Do you know what the shortest left field corner is in baseball? You should know this because it's your favorite place.
Sure. The monster.
Yeah. Now, the monster is unique in that it is short but tall, but it is the nearest. It's 310. There are two parks at 315 that are the second. We'll get back to those in a moment. Do you know what the deepest left field corner in baseball is?
Deepest? Is it Coors?
It's Wrigley. Oh, 355.
That contributes to your point. I probably should have gone with Wrigley.
Yeah. The two parks that are at 315 that are arguably actually the shortest, because Fenway shouldn't count as the shortest left field corner for obvious reasons. But the two that are arguably actually the shortest, tied at 315 feet, are Tropicana and the park formerly known as Minute Maid. The Orange Juice Stadiums are both 315. Down the line and left. It's now what Daikin Field, I think is what it's called, but in Houston. So he was in a stadium that suited him perfectly. He moved to literally the worst place for him to be. He had 212 bad plate appearances, and now he is back in a park that not only is just as good down the line in the corner, but actually is, like, as you move out towards left center, is better for him, I believe, than Tropicana. So I'm pretty excited about Paredes just getting back to what he always did well. And there is no reason for him to be going so late off the board. And if he does what I expect him to do, his value is going to be great as a keeper, even if you have to reach a round or two to get him. And so I will probably be doing that.
So, Chad, what did you say his ADP was?
At Fantrax, 235.9.
Okay. So he's 252 on NFBC, but if you date it since the Kyle Tucker trade on December 13th, it's 198. And so you might think, like, all right, well, now he's moved up and he's now in the top 200. I still think he's probably...
No, it's still too low.
Yeah, I think that's right. Now, look, my thing with guys like Paredes, and it's not just certainly limited to him, is I don't like players where, like, it's not a skill. Like, it's so park dependent or it's team dependent or whatever it might be, but he has done it so much. And it was almost like a joke, the idea of him going to Houston last year at the trade deadline, where it was like, oh my God, if he can just end up there, that, like, now that it's happened, I'm in. So if he gets moved again, if he finds himself in a new park, I'll be completely out, even if it's not one that's as harsh as Wrigley. But I think you have to have interest in a player who, especially since, with some of these guys that we've talked about, they're players that have done it before. This isn't like Chad or I just hoping that these guys figure it out. Like, Brandon Lau has had a 39 homer season before. Isaac Paredes has had monster fantasy seasons before, where he's been a top 50, top 100 player at worst. So we're not asking these guys to do it out of nowhere. This is a player, in this case, who's done it before and is now in a dream situation. So yeah, I'm in on Paredes for this year.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Paredes, like I was saying, I think, and I am double checking this now, but yeah, the wall in Houston should be more favorable to him than Tampa. The left field corner is the same, but it's not as deep to the power alley there. I'm looking at on Bit Savant at his hit chart from last year, and the number of, I'm going to see if I can simplify this for myself, because the number of outs that are showing up on here that are over the wall into the Crawford boxes is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe more. Now, some of those happen on the road. Blah, blah, blah. Like, there's also other things. The ball doesn't travel as far in some places. Others, like, we'll see. But it's a huge, huge benefit for him to be in that park. I think people are overreacting to what happened in Chicago and underreacting to the trade to Houston. Not just
the park. That is the most important thing. But even without Bregman and even without Tucker, that's a really good line. Well, I shouldn't say it's a really good lineup. That's a really good top half of the lineup. He is going to be in a great place to hit.
And they can't be done, right? They're going to add an outfielder, aren't they?
I think they have to. They have like the worst outfield in baseball. If you put Alvarez at DH, then that is like the worst outfield easily in the American League.
Yeah. And if they don't put Alvarez at DH and they keep him in the outfield, then I'm worried about Alvarez and like how healthy does he stay and stuff. So, yeah. Anyways, we got through our guys. It took us a little longer than I would have anticipated, but that's okay. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode. We are still in off-season mode. It'll still be a couple weeks. You'll get this on. It'll be the 6th, something like that. It'll be the 20th, I think, when we come back at you again. But pretty soon, we're going to be getting into spring training, and we'll be back to being with you every week. So hope you've had a good holiday season, good new year, and you're starting to trim down those rosters for Auto New and all your keeper leagues and making those final trades and cuts before it gets to be draft season. So thanks for hanging with us. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks.